You the pop music you love here on VOA1. Anyway.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, we hear stories from Anna Mateo and Brian Lynn. Faith Perlow answers a question from a listener, and we hear a story from Edgar Allan Poe. But first,
the Silver Ball Retro Arcade is near the boardwalk or seaside walking path in the coastal town of Asbury Park in the state of New Jersey. It houses more than 150 working pinball machines. Pinball is an arcade game in which small metal balls shoot down the machine, hitting targets in order to earn points. The Silver Ball Retro Arcade is also a museum. Some of the machines are over 70 years old. They date back to the 1950s, when pinball was at the height of its popularity. The arcade offers fans of pinball a chance to go back in time and experience their childhoods again. William Mina is one such fan. The 24-year-old said that pinball reminds him of his father. He said that growing up, they would play arcade games on the Jersey Shore in the town of Seaside. He used to love all kinds of old stuff, and this is just something that reminds me of him. He's not around anymore, so I come here and I play, and it brings back memories from the past. The collection of pinball machines started when the museum's co-founder, Robert Elvento, started collecting pinball machines for his daughter. She has autism, and one of her favorite activities is playing pinball. Elvento's friend and business partner, Steve Zuckerman, also had a pinball machine collection. So they combined the collections, and in 2009, the museum opened under the name Silver Ball Retro Arcade. Raffi Abelson, who is 48 years old, played one of the oldest pinball machines from the 1950s at the arcade. He said it's like a treat for the senses. It's physical. You can touch it. It feels very different than a video game. You can really experience it. Patty Barber is the museum's senior vice president. She agreed that pinball is a very physical game. She said that pinball takes a lot of attention and makes you live in the moment. Barber added that it is a refreshing change from just staring at a computer device. Even for all of us, and for young people now, it is a very tactile game. All of these different arcade games, you really have to use all of your senses, she said. I'm Faith Perlow.
During a 2020 COVID lockdown in Lagos, Nigeria, Chef Renee Chucks began experimenting with a new pasta recipe. Usually, pasta is made from wheat. But instead of wheat, Chucks used crops grown locally, like cassava and plantain, as her pasta base. Now she sells the dried food in health food stores and online. She named her business Al Dente Africa. She says it is among the first in Nigeria to make gluten-free pasta. Chuck's is part of an international movement to avoid gluten, a protein found in some grains, including wheat. Many people seek wheat substitutes because gluten can create health problems. Cassava is one such substitute for wheat. It is a root vegetable rich in minerals and vitamin C. Nigeria is one of the world's biggest producers of cassava. Gluten is a protein found in wheat and some other grains. Human digestive systems cannot break down gluten completely. While this is not a problem for most people, some people get sick from undigested gluten. One example is an autoimmune response to gluten called celiac disease. Celiac can damage the small intestine. However, Chuck's has other goals besides avoiding gluten. She says Africa should use more locally grown crops to help improve food security on the continent. African countries, she adds, need to consider the foods they eat every day, like cassava. The chef also found that plantain and the small grain fonio works well for pasta making. She adds local herbs and vegetables for taste and color. Some of her pastas are green or pink. I'm Ana Mateo.
A British company has developed a robotic hand that it says can be updated to perform new actions required by the user. The device, also known as a bionic hand, is designed to work like a human hand. It uses electrical signals from muscles in the upper arm to power motors built into the device. Bionic hands can help users pick up and hold on to things. Many are designed only to do specific tasks. Others can be programmed to perform additional actions. The British company, Covey, developed the robotic hand called Nexus. It says the device can be updated through a computer application program or app, remotely from anywhere in the world. Simon Pollard started Covey 5 years ago. He told Reuters news agency the company is now providing users with the ability to request new actions to be added to the Nexus device. Nexus uses the wireless technology Bluetooth to permit the company's specialists to update the bionic hand for users. The fact we can change some of the things that the customer wants remotely is a really powerful thing and a first to market, Pollard said. He added that some other companies have created products that can also be app-controlled. But Covey's robotic hand is different because the updates can be sent to an individual device. One Nexus user is Australian swimmer Jessica Smith. The 2004 Athens Paralympian was born without a left hand. When she was a child, her parents were advised to get her a robotic hand to help with development. But the device caused her to tip over a container of boiling liquid when she was very young. The accident led to serious burns that affected 15% of her body. Smith told Reuters the accident was the most traumatic event in my life. But she heard about the Nexus device and decided to give it a try. Knowing it would be an emotional experience, Smith was fitted with the device in April at the age of 37. "I think that I was ready to try something like this," she said. Smith, who is a speaker and children's book writer, said the device was already creating new movements for her. Smith said that if she requests an update for the hand in the morning, the process is completed just a few hours later. Smith added, "I'm not trying to hide who I am. I'm adding and expanding on who I am by being able to access technology that's never been available before." I'm Brian Lynn.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question from Gustavo in Brazil about using proper adjectives to describe someone. Hello, my name is Gustavo from Brazil. I have been learning English with you for many years. Thank you for all of the stories. I have a question. I want to say my Spanish teacher, meaning my teacher from Spain. Then I realized that it could also mean my teacher that teaches Spanish language classes. So, which is it? Does it mean both? Thank you very much for reading my message, Gustavo. Thanks for your question and for reading our website so often. In English, we have a limited number of adjectives to describe what language someone speaks or teaches, or where they are from. However, we can use proper adjectives and prepositions, as well as other structures, to help our understanding. Let us start with proper adjectives. Proper adjectives come from proper nouns, which are words or groups of words that name a specific person, place, or thing. Proper nouns and adjectives begin with a capital letter, so they are easy to spot. Proper adjectives that describe a country of origin or language come from their proper nouns. These adjectives mean of or relating to the country, its people, language, or culture. Spanish means relating to Spain, so we can talk about Spanish people and Spanish culture. Spanish is also the proper adjective to describe the language of Spain. Generally, when we talk about teaching or learning a language, we use the proper adjective of the language to describe the teacher or student. For example, I am an English teacher. I teach English, but I am not from England. I am from the U.S. In your question, the proper adjective of Spanish is modifying the noun teacher. Therefore, a Spanish teacher means someone who teaches the Spanish language. We can use the preposition from to describe where our language teachers are originally from. My Russian teacher is from the country of Georgia. Her French teacher is from Canada. Using the preposition from makes the sentence clearer by providing more information. Next week, we will continue talking about proper adjectives and other ways to describe your teacher. Please let us know if these examples and explanations have helped you, Gustavo. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Our story today is called The Purloined Letter. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe. Poe is generally known for his horror stories. This is the third of three stories he wrote about Auguste Dupin and how he solves crimes. The story is about a stolen letter. It first appeared in 1844 in a yearly magazine. It was reprinted in many publications, newspapers, and books. This is one of Poe's stories that influenced the development of the modern detective story.
One evening in Paris, during the autumn of 1845, I went to visit a friend, Auguste Dupin. We were smoking our pipes and talking when the door of his apartment opened. Mr. Germain, the head of the Paris police force, came into the room. "I came to ask your advice," Germain said to my friend Dupin. "I'm trying to solve a very important case. It is also a very simple case, so I really need your help. But I thought you would like to hear about it, because it is so strange. My men and I have worked on this case for 3 months, Germain said. It is a very simple case of robbery, but we still cannot solve it." Dupin took the pipe out of his mouth.
"Perhaps the mystery is too simple," he said.
Germain began to laugh. "Too simple," he said. "Who ever heard of such a thing?" I looked at Germain.
"Why don't you tell us the problem?" I said. Germain stopped laughing and sat down.
"All right," he said. "But you must never tell anyone I told you this. The wife of a very important person needs help. I cannot tell you her name, because her husband is a powerful man in the French government. Let us just call her Madame X. 3 months ago, someone stole a letter from Madame X. She is offering a large amount of money to anyone who can return the letter to her. We know that her husband's political enemy, Mr. Darcy, stole the letter. We also know it is somewhere in his apartment. Darcy plans to use the letter to embarrass Madame X's husband and destroy his political power. As you know, I have keys which can open any lock in Paris. For the last 3 months, My man and I have spent every evening looking for the letter in his apartment, but we cannot find it.
Dupin stopped smoking. Tell me how you looked for it, he said. Germont moved forward in his chair.
We took our time, he said. First, we examined the furniture in every room. We opened all the drawers. We looked under the rugs. We searched behind all the paintings on the walls. We opened every book. We removed the boards of the floor. We even took the tops off the tables to see if he had hidden the letter in the table legs. But we cannot find it. What do you advise me to do?
Dupin puffed on his pipe.
What does the letter look like? He asked. It is in a white envelope with a red stamp, Germont said. The address is written in large black letters.
Dupin puffed on his pipe again.
I advise you to go back and search the apartment again, he said.
About 1 month later, Germont came back to see us.
I followed your advice, he said, but I still have not found the letter.
Dupin smiled.
I knew you would not find it, he said. Germont became very red in the face. Then why did you make me search the apartment again? He shouted. My dear Germont, Dupin said, let me tell you a little story. Do you remember the famous Dr. Louis Abernathy? No, Germont shouted. Get to the point, Dupin. Of course, Dupin said. Once a rich old man met Abernathy at a party. The old man was not feeling very well. He decided he would get a medical opinion from the doctor without paying for it. So he described his problems to Abernathy. Now, doctor, the old man said, suppose you had a patient like that. What would you tell him to take? Oh, that is quite simple, said Abernathy. I would tell him to take my advice.
Germont looked embarrassed.
Look here, Dupin, I'm perfectly willing to pay for advice.
Dupin smiled at Germont.
How much money did you say the reward was? He asked.
Germont sighed.
I do not want to tell you the exact amount, but I would give 50,000 francs to the person who helps me find that letter. In that case, Dupin said,
take out your checkbook and write me a check for 50,000 francs. When you have signed the check, I will give you the letter.
Germont looked at Dupin with his mouth open. His eyes seemed to jump out of his head. Then he took out his checkbook and pen and wrote a check for 50,000 francs. He gave it to Dupin.
My friend examined the check carefully and put it in his pocket. Then he unlocked a drawer of his desk, took out the letter, and gave it to Germont. The policeman's hands shook as he opened the letter. He read it quickly. Then he put it in his pocket and ran out of the room without saying a word.
Dupin, I said, as I turned to my friend, how did you solve the mystery?
It was simple, my friend, he said. Germont and his policeman could not find the letter, because they did not try to understand the mind of the man who stole it. Instead, they looked for the letter where they would have hidden it. Mr. Darcy is not a policeman. He is, however, very intelligent. He knew the police would search his apartment. He also knew how police think, so he did not hide the letter where he knew they would look for it. Do you remember how Germont laughed when I said the mystery was difficult for him to solve because it was so simple? Dupin filled his pipe with tobacco and lit it. Well, the more I thought about it, the more I realized the police could not find the letter, because Darcy had not hidden it at all. So I went to visit Darcy in his apartment. I took a pair of dark green eyeglasses with me. I explained to him that I was having trouble with my eyes and needed to wear the dark glasses at all times. He believed me. The glasses permitted me to look around the apartment while I seemed only to be talking to him. I paid special attention to a large desk where there were a lot of papers and books. However, I saw nothing suspicious there. After a few minutes, however, I noticed a small shelf over the fireplace. A few postcards and a letter were lying on the shelf. The letter looked very old and dirty. As soon as I saw this letter, I decided it must be the one I was looking for. It must be, even though it was completely different from the one Germont had described. This letter had a large green stamp on it. The address was written in small letters, in blue ink. I memorized every detail of the letter while I talked to Darcy. Then, when he was not looking, I dropped one of my gloves on the floor under my chair. The next morning, I stopped at his apartment to look for my glove. While we were talking, we heard people shouting in the street. Darcy went to the window and looked out. Quickly, I stepped to the shelf and put the letter in my pocket. Then I replaced it with a letter that looked exactly like it, which I had taken with me. I had made it the night before. The trouble in the street was caused by a man who had almost been run over by a horse and carriage. He was not hurt, and soon the crowd of people went away. When it was over, Darcy came away from the window. I said goodbye and left. The man who almost had an accident was one of my servants. I had paid him to create the incident. Dupin stopped talking to light his pipe. I did not understand. "But Dupin," I said, "why did you go to the trouble of replacing the letter? Why not just take it and leave?" Dupin smiled. "Darcy is a dangerous man," he said. "And he has many loyal servants. If I had taken the letter, I might never have left his apartment alive."
The Purloined Letter was written by Edgar Allan Poe and adapted by Donna DeSanctis. The storyteller was Shep O'Neill. The producer was Lawan Davis.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.